Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Here's the 1-1. This ball's driven to center. Backing up on it, Marisnik. He's racing. Still going back, and it's gone. Straight away center for Bryant. And it's 2-0 Cubs.
Good morning, and this is RP3 and Company, right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from downtown Houston. That's right, only a block away from Minute Maid Park. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz, the producer extraordinaire, is back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We have a tremendous Houston Astros-centric episode of RP3 and Company coming at you today. We'll have both James Yasko and Patrick McClellan, the co-host of the Lima Time podcast. They'll be joining us at separate times later today. We'll also be diving into all things Astros, including last night's big game. We also will have non-Astro stuff to talk about, as obviously, because you're going to want to know about your LSU Tigers. You want to know about your Raging Cajuns and your New Orleans Saints, and we're going to give that all to you this morning. But let's start things off first and foremost. Cody Schutz back there in the 237 Roof Studios. As a diehard Cubby fan, I'm going to go out on a limb, brother, and say that you're in quite the good mood this morning.
This ball's lifted left center fairly deep. It sends back the left fielder Fisher into the nook against the wall, and that ball is gone. A leadoff home run for Kyle Schwarber. His second home run in as many days, and it is 1-0 Cubs.
Yeah, a fat guy batting leadoff went yard last night, Ray.
Yes. I was sitting there watching the game, and I was like, I don't follow the Cubs as much as you do, brother. I follow the Astros because we have them here on 103.7 The Game, as well as on our sister station, KBOL. But when the pudgy guy came to bat as the leadoff hitter, and I was like, what? It's like, what?
It's still undetermined whether Joe Maddon is a genius or just incredibly lucky.
Well, last night he got incredibly lucky because it ended up being quite the pitcher's duel. You know, Schwarber comes to the plate. He hits the leadoff home run for the Cubs there in the very start of the first inning off of Wade Miley, the former Southeastern Lion and Louisiana native. And you're thinking, oh, God, here we go. It's going to be like batting practice. The guys are just going to be teeing off on here. They had the roof closed last night here at Minute Maid Park, and it ended up not being a slugfest whatsoever. It ended up being a pitcher's duel. Kyle Hendricks for the Cubbies pitched 8 stellar innings, only giving up 4 hits, the 1 run that he gave up while striking out 7. And you're thinking, well, that must mean that Wade Miley, he had himself a terrible game. In fact, he did not. He pitched a 7 strong innings. He only gave up 6 hits on 2 runs while striking out 9. But he gave up the 2 solo shots there to Schwarber in the first, and then he gave another solo shot to Chris Bryant, who returned to the Cubs lineup after missing the past 2 games. That home run came in the 3rd inning. And that was pretty much all the offensive firepower out there between these 2 ball clubs who have won World Series championships in recent years. I was surprised. I was surprised, Cody, that it wasn't more of a high-scoring game, especially considering that, you know, the Astros were without Altuve. they were without Springer, and then find out that they're out, they're going to be missing Carlos Carrera, who we'll get to that in a moment, suffered some type of rib injury while receiving a massage at his house. We'll put a feather in that. We'll come back to that discussion. But, you know, they just, it became a pitcher's duel, quick pace game, just fast and furious. And the Cubs snapped their 3-game losing streak, and the Astros, they drop a game here at home before heading out on the road for a 3-game series at the Oakland Athletics. By the way, that 3-game series this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you can listen to live on KVOL, our sister station, 8:35 first pitch on Friday, 8:35 first pitch on Saturday, and then 2:35 on Sunday. But still a tremendous atmosphere for a Wednesday night game. Yes, the Cubs are a national brand, but the folks came out to Minute Maid. Obviously, lots of Cub fans. I'm pretty sure you're not surprised by that, Cody.
No, like I said, the one Cubs game I have been to in person was in Houston, and I wasn't the only Cubs fan there either. Cubs fans exist a lot right here in that corridor that goes all the way from the south to the north, from, you know, Louisiana to Michigan, give or take.
Well, and a lot of that has to do, Cody, as you know, because of WGN.
Right,
you know, correct. You know, a lot of these guys, even myself growing up in Alabama, you know, I grew up a diehard Braves fan because that was our regional team, and we saw them on TV, and more importantly, we heard them on the radio. You know, Cubs were a national team for a lot of people because that was the only team they could watch on television. So Cubs Nation is strong, and thankfully, they weren't as annoying as, say, the Red Sox Nation.
Thank God.
Yes, thank God for small favors. But Wade Miley, though, I want to talk a little bit about him. Former Southeastern Lions star, he pitched well, you know, and when you go out there and you give up a leadoff home run to a pudgy guy that's batting 230 on the year, that can shake your confidence a little bit, but it didn't. He settled down, and yes, he gave up the solo shot to Chris Bryant there in the top of the third, but 7 innings, 6 hits, he scattered those across and only gave up the 2 runs, and more importantly, he struck out 9. For a guy whose career has kind of taken twists and turns, he sure has seemed to find a home here with the Astros, and I know it's a loss and he got tagged with it, but still a strong pitching performance from the former Lions star, and it does seem like he could become a viable number 3 option, because once again, the Astros, they got Justin Verlander, he's 8-2, he's right now, as we enter June, the guy that looks like the front runner to win the American League Cy Young Award. And then behind that is Gerrit Cole, who's got some filthy stuff as well. So you really, the Astros are in a great position where maybe Wade Miley can be their number 3 or their number 4, but he sure is pitching like a top 3 guy in the rotation so far this year. Former LSU star Alex Bregman, he had one of the few highlights at the plate for the Astros. He went 1-for-4, had a double, and then he was able to score the Astros' 1 lone run. Michael Brantley has just been absolutely phenomenal for the Astros. Once again, in the last few weeks, Altuve has been on, you know, he's been on the IL, as they call it now, and Springer, Mr. Springer Dinger, he's joined him on there, and then Carlos Carrera, he's now on there, and they had to reshuffle the infield and the lineup. Bregman went over to shortstop last night, which is not uncommon for him. He's played short before, and he played it in college. But, you know, Bregman's in there, but Michael Brantley has been just a guy that's been kind of carrying the load, because even before Altuve got injured, he was struggling, having the worst season of his career, batting well below 250. He had a little bit of an outburst of power early in the season, but that since has gone away. And Brantley has just been a great pickup for the Astros. He went 2-for-3 last night, another multi-hit game for him. And you know, that's a guy that was on the free agent market and could have been picked up, and the Stros got him, got a steal for this guy, and immensely impressive by his performance once again. And that just goes to show you, even though the Stros lost last night, once again, 2-1 to the Cubbies, you know, they did take 2 of 3 from a team that won a World Series championship the year before they did, and is the second best team in the National League right now behind the Los Angeles Dodgers. So they take 2 of 3 from one of the best teams out of the National League, even with losing last night's game. And they did that, and this is the more impressive thing, they did that against one of the best teams in the National League and did it without their former league MVP in Altuve. And they did it without their leadoff hitter and home run extraordinaire Springer. And then they also did it without Carlos Carrera, who was having a bounce back year after last year being hobbled with the injury. So to take 2 of 3 from a former World Series champion from just a few years ago, despite not having 3 of your top 4 hitters, the other one being obviously Alex Bregman, immensely impressive for the Houston Astros, who are playing at such a high level and look like a contender to come out of the American League and reach the World Series once again. And let me tell you something. This is my first time being here at Minute Maid Park since Alex Bregman has come here. Years ago, I came here as a fan, caught a couple games, and that was back in the days where you could walk up to the ticket office and still get tickets, Cody, and the gate the day of, and then move down. Okay. So things have changed in a lot, and I've been here before in a reporting capacity as well. But the atmosphere here is just immense. Like, once again, this is a midweek game, and the fans came out in droves. And, yeah, you had a lot of Cub fans, and you saw a lot of the blue walking around downtown before and after the game. But the atmosphere was, you know, tons of people there for the midweek game, and they love them some Alex Bregman over here, Cody. And I know you're not surprised by that. But when he comes to the plate, you know, there may not be a guy on the team besides Altuve that the fan base gets up for. They love them some Alex Bregman over here in Houston, brother.
I'm going to say that's got something to do with, you know, maybe could it be that he's from Albuquerque? You know, New Mexico is sort of regionally similar to Texas. And then I think it's got even more to do with the fact that he is an Astro. He came up in their system. He's on their team. He was drafted by them. He hasn't played for anyone else. It's the type of thing, you know, you've only ever seen Alex Bregman wear an LSU jersey and then an Astros jersey. So I think maybe that's got something to do. That's why I feel so much love for guys like Anthony Rizzo, because, you know, I've never seen him play in any other colors besides Cubby Blue. So I think it's got something to do with that, is that he's their guy, quote-unquote homegrown, if you will, and very much so a future superstar, if he's not already there in the league.
Yeah, and he definitely has a little bit of that swag quality too, Cody, and he carries himself, and the fans love him. I saw, you know, obviously the jersey that I saw going around the concourse area in the stands, Altuve was number one, obviously. There was a lot of Carrera jerseys as well, but there were a ton of Bregman jerseys. And when he came to the plate, boy, the folks got amped up and pumped up, man. They love them some Alex Bregman. They love their former LSU Tiger here on staff. By the way, All-Star voting is now open to the fans. So if you want to go vote for your favorite Astros players, including Alex Bregman or Michael Brantley or Wade Miley, you can go do so. Go to MajorLeagueBaseball.com and vote for your favorite Astros and try to get some former Tigers and former Louisiana residents in there into the All-Star game representing the Houston Astros. We're going to keep the Astros conversation going here after this break. You're listening to RP3 and Company live from downtown Houston right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from downtown Houston, Texas, just a block away from Minute Maid Park, the big juice box for this Houston Astros edition of RP3 and Company. The producer extraordinaire Cody Schutz is back live there in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. If you want to give us a call, hey, don't hesitate. Pick up the phone. Call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Last night, the Houston Astros fell at home to the Chicago Cubs by the score of 2-1. Kyle Schwarber and Chris Bryant had a pair of solo home runs, and that proved to be enough to tag Wade Miley with the loss, despite the strong effort of seven innings, giving up only six hits, two runs, while striking out nine. He was just slightly a little less as dominant than his counterpart, Kyle Hendricks, who only gave up one run on four hits in eight innings of work, striking out seven to get the win there for the Chicago Cubs. But despite that, the Houston Astros are still 37-20 overall. They are rolling. They're one of the best teams in all of baseball and look like an immensely strong contender to come out of the American League and get to the World Series. They have Justin Verlander, who looks like the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, for the early season Cy Young Award at 8-2 overall on the bump. And they're doing all this with injuries. You know, Jose Altuve, the heart and soul of this team, former league MVP, one of the probably the most beloved current Houston Astro, has been injured. He was struggling even before then. Springer has now been on the IL. And joining him is Carlos Carrera. Joining them is Carlos Carrera. And Carlos had been having a huge bounce back year. You know, last year he dealt with some injuries. He wasn't himself. You could tell at the plate. He just didn't have that great swing of his. And it was announced last night, or yesterday evening rather, that he was going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. Now, he was held out of the first game of the series against the Chicago Cubs, and then game two, he was a scratch, and then it was revealed yesterday that he was going to miss 4 to 6 weeks after suffering a fractured rib. And I know what you're thinking. Wow, what happened? Did Carlos get involved in a collision at the plate that I don't remember? Did he just slide in and got up onto someone's spikes? What happened? Did someone go ballistic in the dugout and was swinging bats around and Carlos was just a bystander? None of those things. He sustained an injury, in his words, after receiving a massage at his home. Once again, Carlos Carrera, the 2015 AL Rookie of the Year, who's currently hitting .295 with 11 home runs and 35 ribbies for the Astros, is going to be on the injured list for 4 to 6 weeks because he somehow suffered fracturing a rib while getting a massage at his home. Cody Schutz, your thoughts?
That brings a whole new meaning to deep tissue massage. I mean, I don't know. I've only ever had a massage once in my life, and it was a couple's massage. Somebody gave it to us for a gift. I forget exactly where, but that's the only reason I've ever been. And I mean, in my very little experience of massages, I have no idea how something like this happens.
I just have questions. Isn't a massage supposed to relax your muscles? Isn't it? Aren't you supposed to not be injured from a massage? I've only received a massage once. Okay. It was a relaxing experience. I don't remember there ever being a moment during the massaging process where I was going to fracture a rib.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way. I mean, somebody did something wrong, whether Correa moved wrong or the massage therapist, screwed up. Somebody, if this is true, and he really has an injury because of a massage, someone did something wrong.
This is what Carlos had to say. Quote, "I'm extremely disappointed about not being on the field with my teammates. I sustained the rib fracture during a massage at my home on Tuesday. To sustain an injury in such an unusual way makes it even more frustrating. However, I will work hard to get back on the field as quickly as possible to help our team achieve our goal of winning another championship. They're going to move Bregman over, obviously, to play shortstop while this occurs. And here's the thing. If you're the Astros, this comes at a fairly bad time because your middle of your infield is now gone. Altuve has been out. He's still doing his rehab assignment with AAA Round Rock right now this week because of that hamstring injury. And, you know, he's been dealing with fatigue as well and soreness in his right leg. And now you got Carrera gone for an additional 4 to 6 weeks. Thankfully, you got Bregman who can slide over and play short, and he played it well. It looked no effort fielding the ball and throwing guys out at first base. So you're good there, okay? And this is A.J. Hinch and his staff. They'll have this team prepared, but to have a guy miss because of that, because of a massage, and the other thing for Carlos is he was having such a great bounce back year after dealing with the injuries last year and was really returning to form and was having an all-star caliber season so far. So he's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. Hopefully he can bounce back from that injury, but that's a very odd injury to take place. On a more serious note from last night's game, there was a moment that kind of just made you hold your breath. And that occurred when Albert Almora Jr. for the Cubs, the center fielder, he hit a foul ball off his bat during the fourth inning, and it hit a small child. And it just stopped. Like, you could hear a pin drop inside Minute Maid Park. Yeah, everyone was holding their breath. And the little girl had to be rushed. A member of the security picked her up. It happened right past the netting that the Astros have because the Astros have additional netting there across the baselines. And she was sitting maybe 10 feet further down from that, and she got hit by a foul ball. They had to take her to the emergency room, and, you know, Almora had to be consoled by Joe Maddon and teammates and by a member of security. Thankfully, as far as we know right now, the little girl is in stable condition. She did not lose consciousness, and so far possibly no serious long-term injury, but we will keep you posted on that. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk to John Marques of the Town Talk right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, where our special Houston Astros edition of the show. It's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of today's program. He joins us every Thursday, and you know what? He's making a special appearance this morning for us, taking time out from his vacation where he visited the holy grail of baseball fans, Cooperstown. It's our good friend, John Marques. John, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, I'm doing well, Ray. How about you?
Doing great. Got to catch an Astros game last night here at the ballpark right about a block away from me. So, John, I want to get to you about your love for the Houston Astros and everything like that. But first things first, your thoughts on the Will Wade presser from the other day there down in Destin from the SEC spring meetings?
It was nice that he finally, after what, 2.5-3 months, met the media. But, you know, he still didn't answer the big question. Is that you that said strong ass offer to sign Javonte Smart? And he sort of sidestepped that. You know, I would think if you or I had said something like that, you would remember it. The bottom line is he's back. He's LSU's coach. He's going to be the coach this coming season. Nothing's going to derail that we think of unless there's another bombshell tape out there. But, you know, whether he's still LSU's coach 2 seasons from now, 3 seasons from now, is still up in the air because, you know, the NCAA is going to launch an investigation. You just don't know when. Right now they're looking at Arizona. They're looking at Kansas. But you know LSU's time is coming. So it was nice he met the media. It would have been even nicer if he had done it back in Louisiana where maybe more media would have been there. But, you know, tip of the hat, at least he met the media, and I don't think he really said anything earth-shattering, although he did deny paying Nas Reed $300,000. So, you know, hat tip for that.
John, did you feel that he was remorseful, that he seemed to be a little bit more humbled? You know, we've always talked about him kind of carrying himself with a little bit of cockiness. Do you think this is going to maybe change him moving forward?
You know, that's hard to say. And in his defense, I mean, it's safe to say this is who he is. This is his personality. And it's got him, you know, a pretty good job in a power conference. So why should he change? You know, now if he loses his job and gets slapped with a 5-year show cause penalty by the NCAA, then maybe he changes. But you know, this is who he is. Just ask Bob Marlin how, you know, his personality. That's, you know, to me, you saw the true Will Wade.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com right here on Arco Equipment Hotline. John, I want to get your thoughts, though, because I found this interesting. This kind of broke yesterday that Governor John Bel Edwards was texting LSU officials about Javonte Smart and Will Wade during their suspensions. Your thoughts on the governor having an interest in what was going on there at LSU?
I mean, can we really be surprised that anything dealing with LSU or anything dealing with Louisiana involves politics? I mean, you know, this is an election year. He, by all accounts, he's going to face a tough re-election because he's the only Democrat who's a governor in the southern state, so you know he's a target. It doesn't surprise me he's keeping tabs on that. You know, it's sort of funny that he was keeping tabs on it, and then as soon as Will Wade, after the season was over, was reinstated, it wasn't long after that Joe Oliva was removed and Scott Woodward was brought in. And who was one of the people pulling the strings on all that? It was Jay Darden, you know, John Bell's right-hand man, who was a big supporter of all this, you know, wrote out, you know, I think he even wrote a couple of columns saying that, hey, LSU needs new leadership. It was Carville, who is, as we all know, a big Democrat operative and strategist who, you know, John Bel Edwards was the big Democrat governor. So, you know, nothing surprises me. To John Bel Edwards' defense, he didn't, so far, nothing has come out that looks like he put any pressure on LSU to reinstate Wade or to play Smart or anything like that. He just wanted to, you know, keep tabs, but as I said, you know, everything in Louisiana involves politics, so it doesn't surprise me.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com right here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. John, you know, obviously Will Wade has had his presser, and also news came out this week that all the guys are coming back that we expected to come back for the LSU Tigers. Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, Emmett Williams, Marlon Taylor. With those guys coming back and now Wade being essentially cleared and allowed to coach the team, do you feel that the LSU basketball program can now move forward and maybe live up to some higher expectations this coming season?
You know, they can move forward, and they got the kid from, I think it was Birmingham last week, big commitment. So they're going to have a good team. The problem is, you know, last year they only, you know, there was the NCAA cloud hovering over them, you know, after the allegations that came out in October that Wade had been involved in the wiretaps and all that. But then you didn't hear anything about it until you got to March. And then, you know, the news broke right before the final game against Vanderbilt. And then they went into postseason with really, you know, the raging inferno, his suspension. In many ways, all that is still carrying over. Until the NCAA clears Will Wade, they come in and they investigate and they say, nope, there's nothing found here. You're still going to have that specter behind it. And, you know, I mean, it's going to be tough for them to go into opposing arenas next year because, you know, Javonte Smart's going to be, you know, he's going to be a target of hecklers. Maybe all the other players, hey, how much does LSU pay you? I mean, could you imagine if they were in the ACC and they had to go to Durham or you know, Virginia Tech or some of the other places with notorious rowdy fans? You know, you don't get that as much in SEC, but, you know, there's still going to be some distractions next year, but they should have a team that's going to compete for the, you know, maybe the top three, four spots, maybe even, you know, basically the double bye in the SEC tournament.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, I want to transition to baseball. I know you're a lifelong, diehard Houston Astros fan. So I want to get your thoughts on this team. Despite the injuries that they're dealing with, Altuve, mm-hmm. Springer, and now Carrera, they're still one of the best teams in the big leagues. Your thoughts on how A.J. Hinch has had this team perform during the early part of this season?
You know, it was 2 years ago when they won the World Series, they got off to the franchise best record. And I think that was through the middle of May. I can't remember the exact games. And they had pretty much wrapped up the AL West by that point. And, you know, this year's team was ahead of that pace prior to this past week and a half when all the injuries started developing. You know, the pitching, even though they don't have Dallas Keuchel, they didn't re-sign him, you know, a Cy Young winner. You know, my goodness, they're, you know, the offense sort of struggled at the beginning of the season, but then it just lit fire. You know, I'm looking at the standings, and they're 92-run differential, second best in the major leagues behind Minnesota. And what's impressive is, you know, I was looking at all the players that have now been hurt, Springer, Correa, Diaz, Altuve. I mean, it's that the fact that they're still winning is impressive. Of course, you can thank Alex Bregman, who is a legitimate MVP candidate, who just keeps getting better and better. Although, you know, George Springer was probably maybe one of the leading candidates for MVP in the AL prior to his injury. The one thing that concerns me as an Astros fan going on is Jose Altuve, because last year, you know, if you're an Astros fan, you remember him limping through the postseason when he probably shouldn't have played if it had been the regular season. He had to have knee surgery after the season. And, you know, I read where A.J. Hinch said last week was, or like yesterday, that the hamstring that really originally put him on the DL has gotten better, but now he's feeling pain in his surgically repaired leg. That causes me pause because you know, George Springer's great, Alex Bregman's great, but the heart and soul of that team is Jose Altuve. And if he has to have surgery again and is gone for the regular season, that is a major loss. So hopefully, you know, best case scenario, he comes back in August or September. But to me, they can't win in the postseason if they don't have Jose Altuve at second base, a healthy Jose Altuve.
How much of a steal has Michael Brantley been for this team, especially considering Altuve's struggles and the injuries that the ball club has incurred, John?
Oh, I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, and they've had a knack of picking up players, and it's mainly been pitchers who just didn't perform for whatever reason, and turning them around. And Brantley's sort of the first position player where, you know, he had struggled for about two of the last 3 years in Cleveland. Last year he sort of, you know, got back, you know, back to where everybody thought he could have been. And he's probably the major key because he's a left-handed hitter. that lineup is full of right-handed hitters. He gives them that added dimension from the left side of the plate. He's been key. And, you know, if, like I said, you know, if Springer, Correa and Altuve, you know, three-fourths of their big four are out, you know, they need him to continue to play like he has.
John, I appreciate you making time for us on your vacation nonetheless. Next time we'll have to have you come on and talk of just how amazing Cooperstown truly was. So enjoy the rest of your vacation with your family, brother, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Good. Seeing the Who tonight in Pittsburgh, so it's going to be great.
That's John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com, and I'm pretty sure he is the president of the Who fan club for the state of Louisiana as well. Joining us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, we appreciate John making the time. When we come back here on this special edition of RP3 and Company live from downtown Houston, we'll wrap up the first hour with a little LSU-Bama talk. Not primetime worthy? What? We'll discuss it after this on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm broadcasting live from downtown Houston, Texas, just a block away from Minute Maid Ballpark for this special Houston Astros edition of RP3 and Company. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Some news broke yesterday, and we didn't have a chance to get to it on yesterday's show, so I want to tackle it now. LSU-Alabama, the rivalry game, has become primetime viewing for not only the entire Southeastern Conference, but for the entire nation. It's been one of those marquee games on the calendar. You look at the slate of games, and that's usually one of the games that gets circled by not only fans here that wear the purple and gold in the state of Louisiana, but also from coast to coast. Well, this year, it will not be prime time. And a bit of a surprise move, CBS Network revealed that their two doubleheaders, because they always have two doubleheaders every season since 2011, will be on September 21st and November 16th, which means that the Bama-LSU game will not be one of those doubleheaders. The Tigers and the Tide meet on November the 9th. CBS broadcasts an afternoon SEC game each week. That's the SEC game of the week, as we know. The change started occurring back in 2011 when it added a night game to the television schedule. If you remember, that was the year that LSU traveled to Tuscaloosa and knocked off Alabama in the quote-unquote the game of the century. That ended up being 9-6 overtime win for LSU. And then they had the rematch in the national championship game down in New Orleans. Last year, Alabama came into Death Valley and beat LSU 29-0, the worst shutout loss in a generation. That was 4 years in a row that the Tide had won the game by double digits. So is it because of that, because of the lopsidedness to the series in the last four games, that CBS decides not to have it as a primetime game? I'm still surprised, because this is a rivalry game. LSU is going to begin this season ranked in the top 10. They have a legitimate shot of making the college football playoff. And we know Alabama's going to be in the mix. And hell, that game in Tuscaloosa this year could help decide who wins the SEC West and who remains in the hunt for a spot in the college football playoffs. Cody Schutz, you're a diehard LSU fan. We know you bleed the purple and gold. Were you surprised yesterday when you found out that the LSU-Bama game was, in fact, not going to be in primetime?
Surprised, yes. Yeah, I would have thought that there was no shot that this was going to be, they're going to play it in primetime. This was not even on my radar, I'll say that. Like, the fact that it got switched around like that, I would have never seen this coming. I do like, though, I saw, and I'm trying to find it to give credit, and I'm struggling right now. I'll come up with it, though. But someone, I believe, posted it on our Facebook page when we posted about this, saying that they think it's a good thing because it takes some of the pressure off of LSU now because this game's not in prime time. It's not, you know, all eyes on it, the game of the century, whatever. You know, it takes some of that pressure off that the LSU-Alabama game isn't necessarily the end-all, be-all. You have to win this game or lose the whole season. It doesn't matter. Da, 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 da. It kind of takes some of that feeling of the game away because they're going to play it during the day now. So, you know, I tend to agree with that. I mean, of course, it all sees how the season goes. If LSU has four losses going to the Bama game, no one cares. But, you know, I think it could work out better for LSU. And I think that no matter how you slice it, this is only a good thing for LSU. I'm not going to say that they're necessarily going to win the game now, but I think that it's only good for LSU that this game has been moved up into the daytime where it's got less eyes on it. There'll be less pub by, you know, lunchtime of that day. There really be not too much more to talk about in that game. So I think it's only a good thing for the Tigers.
I would not disagree with you, Cody. I do believe it not being prime time and all those games have been in prime time since the last time they won, right? The first game that was in prime time was the game of the century, and they've lost every game since then. So this gives them an opportunity maybe not to have as much pressure. I also think maybe the CBS looked at the schedule and was like, maybe there's not another quality game there. I mean, they're taking the Georgia-Notre Dame game earlier in the season, and that's, you know, obviously that's going to be a national game as well. So maybe there wasn't another great matchup that weekend for them to do the doubleheader. But still, everyone will be watching that game that Saturday afternoon. You can bet that. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll lead off hour number two. Raging Cajuns football, the buzz is already building. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me thanks draft or two, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that belt.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live today from downtown Houston, just a block away from Minute Maid Ballpark. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We led off today's show talking Houston Astros baseball for this special episode. They fell last night to the Chicago Cubs 2-1. But they still take the series 2 games out of 3. Wade Miley had a strong performance, even though he got tagged with the loss. And the Astros are still rolling right along, despite having injuries to Jose Altuve, George Springer, and now Carlos Carrera. They're still one of the best teams in baseball. They're gearing up for a 3-game series at the Oakland Athletics. You can listen to all 3 of those games live this weekend, Friday through Sunday, on our sister station, KBOL. 8:35 first pitch for Friday and Saturday, 2:35 on Sunday. We also talked about that scary moment that occurred during the game in the 4th inning when a young fan was hit by a foul ball. She had to be rushed to the emergency room, and it affected everyone involved, including the Chicago Cubs starting center fielder who hit the pitch and had to be consoled by his manager and then by a security guard later when he tried to check on the status of the young girl. It definitely put things in perspective, so to speak, there at the ball game. But all reports are the Astros have released a statement. All reports are right now that the young girl did not lose consciousness. She was taken to a local hospital and that she is doing okay. But if we get an update on that, we will surely pass that along. We also talked about LSU Bama not being in prime time for the first time in almost a decade. Does that affect anything? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? We're actually going to throw that up on the Twitter account. We're going to ask you. We're going to get your insight. You can go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account and leave you, you know, you can leave us your feedback and let us know, do you think LSU, Bama not being in prime time helps the Tigers or hurts the Tigers? You can give us your thoughts, and we'll update that poll question throughout the rest of today's show. But right now, I want to talk a little Ragin' Cajuns football, because the first year under Billy Napier was a great success. They won the Sun Belt Conference Western Division title, played for the championship game, fell short, and then got themselves back to a bowl game in year one under Billy Napier, which is a great accomplishment. And they're building, trying to build something. They're trying to change the culture. It's all about the, you know, culture with the UL and all the hashtags and the social media. They're doing great on the recruiting trail, have the number one rated recruiting class in the Sun Belt Conference. Locked that up. And they had a good spring, and now they're gaining some momentum heading into the fall. And yesterday they were recognized as being one of the best teams in the Sun Belt Conference. Athlon Sports released its preseason teams, and guess what? The Ragin' Cajuns had more than a dozen players earn preseason All-Sun Belt honors. Athlon's preseason magazine slated the Cajuns with the second most preseason selections, only one behind Troy. They're tied with defending champ Appalachian State. The Ragin' Cajuns have 15 players recognized on the preseason all-conference teams. They're led by offensive lineman Robert Hunt and Kevin Dotson. They were named to the first team, along with all-purpose running back Trey Regis and return specialist Raymond Calais, the former Cecilia High star. Another local product got some love as well, running back Elijah Mitchell, a former star at Erath High School, and wide receiver Jamarcus Bradley were named to the second team on offense, while defensive lineman Benny Higgins and linebacker Jacques Boudreaux, first of all, that guy just has a name meant to be playing for the Ragin' Cajuns, and I think he's from New Jersey. How that happened, I do not know. But Higgins and Boudreaux were named to the second team on defense. The third team also featured running back Raymond Calais, who got on there as a running back, as well as center Cole Prudhomme. While defensive honors on the third team went to defensive lineman Zion Hill, another local product here in Acadiana. He, of course, prepped at Catholic High of New Iberia. And linebacker Chauncey Manick also received 13 honors. But we're not done. Linebacker Joe Dillon, who missed all of last season due to injury. Now, remember, he was a former freshman All-American, but he missed all of last year due to injury. And defensive back Michael Jacquette, here from Southeast Texas, a former Beaumont Central star, were named to the fourth team on defense, along with specialist kicker Stevie Arteague, former Lafayette High Mighty Lion, another local product who also missed all of last season to injury. So that tells you what the national media folks think of the Ragin' Cajuns. That tells you what they think of the job that Billy Napier is doing. When you put 15 guys on the preseason teams, and I know it's just not, you know, one team, two, you know, it's first team, second team, third team, fourth team. I get that. But look, Athlon does this for all the conferences. And the fact that the Ragin' Cajuns had the second most preseason selections for Athlon Sports is a big deal. And this just gives them even more momentum. That tells you that expectations, look, expectations are high within the program. Period. Billy Napier and his staff have high expectations for this team. And look, they are not by any stretch of the imagination content with the fact that they won the Sun Belt Western Division title last year, played for the championship game, because they lost the championship game. And that motivates them. They lost to Tulane, and that game got out of hand when it shouldn't have. And a lot of people thought the Ragin' Cajuns were going to roll the Green Wave in the Advocare Cure Bowl down there in South Florida. That didn't happen. So as much preseason love as they're getting, I can guarantee you that Billy Napier and his staff feel like there's still work to be done, that they're not quite there. Yeah, they took a great step in the right direction last season. They're building their culture. They had a winning season. They won the Western Division title. They played in a bowl game. But they're not content. And they feel like they need to take the next step. And you could see that just talking to him during spring football. If you have any conversation with Billy, it's very much still got to hit our goals, still have work to do. We can't settle, can't settle. And this team is definitely taking on that mantra, so to speak, right now. But 15 preseason selections for the Athlon sports team for the Raging Cajuns. And look, and they'll have an opportunity to make a statement right off the bat. Because just to remind you, they start off the 2019 football season inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome against Mississippi State. That's part of that 1-1 deal that they got with the Fighting Cowbells. But instead of having it at Cajun Field, they're going to have it inside the Superdome. We know the Raging Cajun faithful out there listening right now. We know y'all love going to New Orleans. Hell, who doesn't? I would expect a good crowd of Raging Cajuns, especially after last year. Look, you know, I know attendance was a little down there at Cajun Field because I think a lot of people were doing a wait-and-see approach. Okay, yeah, we got a new coach, but let's see what happens. Let's see if he is going to turn things around. Let's see if he's going to clean things up with the program, a program that had been marred with some off-the-field incidents with having victories stripped away. And I believe Billy Napier and his staff have done a tremendous job of rebuilding trust, so to speak, with the Raging Cajun fan base in Acadiana. I think you're going to see an uptick in attendance this year because of that, because I'm hearing a lot of buzz. Look, there's always going to be the vocal, diehard Raging Cajun fans, okay? And I hear from them all the time, personally, off the air. But I'm hearing buzz about this team, and not just because of them receiving preseason recognition from Athlon Sports, but just in the community across from Acadiana. People are asking me, well, what do you think about the Raging Cajuns? They sure do seem like they're heading in the right direction. Could they compete for a conference championship? So the people in the community are starting to get a little excited, and expectations have now arising for this program. And that's exactly what Billy Napier was hired to do, is to clean things up, get things back on the right track, recruit quality players, recruit the hell out of the state of Louisiana. And this, they're doing a tremendous job. No one signed more in-state kids and more top prospects, top 100 prospects in the state of Louisiana than UL. The only other team that did that was LSU. That's where UL needs to be. They need to be number two in the state in keeping homegrown products here and not letting them be poached by the likes of Southern Miss or, you know, Texas State or UTEP or anybody like that. So they're keeping the in-state kids. They got the terrific recruiting class, and they got something to build off of. And here's a great thing. Billy Napier, this is what you got to remember too. Napier is part of that Nick Saban coaching tree. Saban is at his best the next year following a defeat. If you look historically at him and what he's done, if there's an embarrassing defeat, if there's a game that they should have won that they didn't, he uses that as motivation. He uses that as fuel to work his team even harder, to make them practice even harder and longer. I expect the same thing from Billy Napier and his staff. I expect the same thing. They're going to continue using how the season ended last year with back-to-back losses in the Sun Belt Conference Championship game, as well as the bowl game versus Tulane. And they're going to use that as fuel. And I can see, you're going to see, a far more focused Raging Cajuns team. Not that they didn't have focus last year, but I think you're going to see it. There's going to be a razor focus to this team this coming season. I think they got a lot to prove. I think they got a chip on their shoulder. I think they have the first year under their belt, so to speak. And they're going to go out and try to prove to people that they belong not only in the Sun Belt, but they belong to be in the conversations being one of the best teams in the state. And I think they're going to have a great chance to prove that right off the bat against Mississippi State. Look, Mississippi State had an up and down year last year. They're very much a one-dimensional offense. You know, it's going to be the season opener. Can they catch maybe Mississippi State kind of sleeping on them? We'll have to see. But a tremendous preseason honor for the Raging Cajuns to land 15 players on the Athlon Sports preseason team, second most in the league, tied for the second most in the league with the defending champ, App State. And real quickly, before we head out, some news that broke about an hour ago concerning a former Raging Cajun basketball star, Sean Long, has officially signed with the Melbourne United team for the 2019-20 NBL season. If you remember, Long lit up the league last season playing for the New Zealand Breakers, was a dominant force on both ends of the court, as he averaged the second most rebounds and blocks per game last season in the league, along being top five in points. So Sean Long is continuing his pro career down under by signing a contract with the Melbourne United. So congratulations to the former Raging Cajun star on continuing his career. When we come back here on this special edition of RP3 and Company live from Houston, we'll talk about another Raging Cajun star getting some love, Summer Ellison. She picked up yet another honor, well-deserved. We'll dive into that when we come back here right on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game for the special Houston Astros edition of the show. I'm broadcasting live from downtown Houston, a block away from Minute Maid Ballpark. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos back there in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We led off this hour talking about Raging Cajun's football team building some serious buzz nationally. Athlon Sports released its preseason teams. The Raging Cajuns landed 15 on the All Sunbelt preseason teams by Athlon Sports, second most in the league, tied with defending champ App State, and only one behind Troy. We also told you that Sean Long has signed a contract to continue playing basketball down under. So congratulations to that former Raging Cajun star. But we're going to keep the accolades going for Raging Cajuns. Summer Ellison, former Terlings Catholic star, who just was dominant from start to finish this year for the Raging Cajun softball team. She picked up yet another honor yesterday. She was named to the 2019 National Fast Pitch Coaches Association, NFCA, Division I All-American team. It's a well-deserved reward for a dominant performance, record-setting performance this season for the Raging Cajuns. She received her first career All-American accolade. I'm going to go out on a big limb and say it's probably not going to be her last. She was one of only 54 student-athletes across the entire Division I ranks, a total of 297 teams, ladies and gentlemen, to achieve the honor. This is what Jerry Glasgow had to say about his star pitcher picking up All-American honors. Quote, Summer truly had an All-American season, and her performance was far beyond deserving of being rewarded at the highest level. Myself and our entire coaching staff are elated to see her acknowledged for giving our program and the university one of the most dominant seasons ever. The selection of Ellison to the NFCA Division I All-American team increases the total number of All-American selections for the program to 54. There have now been 33 different individuals who've been bestowed All-American honors in Raging Cajun softball history. That's phenomenal. Ellison has just been collecting the honors left and right in the last month or so. She was named to the NFCA All-Central Region First Team back on May 6, which automatically made her eligible for All-American honors. She was the nation's leader in wins at all levels of collegiate softball. Once again, she led the nation at all levels of collegiate softball. During the 2019 season, she went 39-6 overall to become the first Raging Cajun to reach 30 wins since 2013. She was named the Sunbelt Conference Pitcher of the Year as she recorded the second most wins and third most strikeouts in program history in a season. 39 wins is the second most. She struck out, wait for it, 354 batters. 354 batters just this season. That's the third most strikeouts in program history in a season. Ellison also ranked top 10 nationally in every major pitching category and entered the NCAA postseason as one of only five pitchers with an ERA below one. She reached double digits in strikeouts on 13 occasions, and she had a hand in 17 shutouts, including her first career NCAA postseason shutout. That was against Ole Miss in the NCAA Oxford Regional. Obviously, we know the Raging Cajuns fell short of winning that regional as they dropped two games to Ole Miss on that Sunday as Ole Miss advanced to the Supers. Ellison also joins a select list of Lafayette area natives to be named an All-American, joining the likes of Allison Habits back in 1994, Carly Hubbard accomplished the feat in 2009, and then, of course, Shelley Landry back in 2015. And Ellison helped lead the Raging Cajuns to a 52-win season, and let's not forget the 25-0 record in Sunbelt Conference play. It was the first 50-win season since 2012, and they also had a top-10 national ranking. It was also only the second undefeated conference mark on Sunbelt history. So congratulations to Summer Ellison for picking up a well-deserved All-American honor. And look, that's not going to be the last All-American honor for that young woman. I can tell you that she may get another one this year as well. And she's gotten better. She was great last year, her first year as a starter. She made a huge jump this year to become even more of a dominant pitcher, a more complete pitcher. And the thing that you got to love about Summer is her composure. She's very even-keeled. She doesn't get too over the top. She doesn't get too over-enthusiastic. When you talk to her in interviews, she's just very kind of chill, focused. She's got laser focus, but she doesn't get too high or too down. And that's what you need from your starting pitcher. That's what you need from your ace. So tremendous job that she's taken. She's just gotten better as her career has progressed. And she didn't get a lot of playing time early on at UL. She had to, you know, earn her way. She admittedly even said that she had to learn how to become a Division I pitcher. And if she makes the step that she did last season to this season for next year, watch out, because it's going to be more All-American honors, and she may rewrite the entire Raging Cajun record books if that happens, because she's just that good. And if she continues to progress, watch out, because just watch out, because she made a huge leap from last year to this year. And she was a very good pitcher last year. So be interesting to see where her career takes her for the former Turlings Catholic star and now Raging Cajun star. And here's the thing, the Raging Cajuns get her again next year. Like, she's not going anywhere. How amazing is that for them? When we come back here on RP3 and Company, broadcasting live from downtown Houston, we're going to talk to the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, the one and only James Yasko, will be joining us talking all things Stros right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game and the special Houston Astros edition of the show. I'm broadcasting live from downtown Houston, just a block away from Minute Maid Ballpark, while Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head back out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and come back to some Houston Astros talk with our good friend. He is the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, He joins us every Thursday. It's our good friend, James Yasko. James, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, not too bad, except I just got put on the injured list, so I guess I'll be out for 4 to 6 weeks.
yes, the injured list. Let's start there. I'm sitting there in the crawfish boxes for the game, and I see the news that Carlos Carrera is going to be shelved for 4 to 6 weeks for a rib injury occurred during a massage. Do you buy that? And have you ever heard of that before, James?
Yeah, I've had a massage before. I did not like it. I would pay someone $75 to put me in a room and just leave me alone. But my wife gets massages, and I was asking her about it, and she goes, "No, it could happen." And I guess that it's not. While your first thought is to be skeptical, like it can happen, and it's not common, but it's not something that immediately like your radar goes up and think, well, that's bull crap. I wonder what really happened. So I guess giving him the benefit of the doubt, you know, I don't know. I there's no telling, but I mean, just, nothing is going to change the fact that he was having a really good season. Something weird happened, and now he's probably done until the All-Star break.
We're talking with James Yasko here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. He's the co-host of the Lima Time podcast. James, he was having such a great bounce-back year. Last year he struggled with the injuries. It showed, especially at the plate. He was doing it all with his glove and inside the batter's box this year, having an All-Star caliber type of season. Now he's going to be shelved for 4 to 6 weeks. How just disappointing is that as an Astro fan to see a guy returning to form, helping lead your team to a terrific start, and then have him shelved for almost 2 months?
I mean, it's really disappointing. And again, I think it's just one of those things where you just kind of sit back and think, well, crap, that sucks. But I don't know who to be mad at. And that's, I think, part of the frustration. And all year long, I think I go back to the preseason episode where I was talking to you and you're like, what's the biggest concern? And I think the general consensus is if they stay healthy, everything's going to be okay. And the wheels have completely fallen off of this season in that regard. So it's disappointing, but the good news is it's the end of May and not the end of August or the end of September. And this is happening. So there is time and the Astros have enough of a cushion to where, the hope is they can just sort of ride it out. But any thoughts of the division being wrapped up by the middle of June, I think that's pretty much nipped in the bud.
We're talking with James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, what are you hearing about the news about Jose Altuve? He's been dealing with that fatigue and soreness in his right leg. He had the hamstring issue. He's yet to return. I know he's doing AAA assignment right now. What's the thought process with Jose, and do you think he can come back and start getting his groove back because he has not been right all year?
He was fine when he was hitting a home run every game. I think the thing to be concerned about with Altuve, I guess there's a coin flip here. Is the one, I think if I understand correctly, he's not on that minor league rehab assignment. He's back in Houston, doing strength and rehab exercises on his knee. He went down with a hamstring, and it ends up being the knee that he had surgery on that sort of delayed this progress. So he didn't look good over the course of the previous few weeks. Before going on the injured list, but it's related to what happened this off season, and not so much the injury that won't the hamstring that won't heal. So they're going to play it extremely cautiously with Altuve and Springer and Diaz and Correa, just because the goal, obviously they want to win the division, but the goal is to get to the postseason, and I think they saw what happened with Correa last year and maybe trying to bring him back a little too early, and he was not right at all. You want to make sure that they're straight heading into heading into the postseason.
James, does this team need Jose Altuve to make a run in the postseason?
I think, yeah. I mean, he's won, what, three of the last four batting titles and, you know, hits leader in Major League Baseball since he's come up. And, you know, he's a table setter for those guys. And Altuve has some pop, but you get Altuve on before, you know, Correa comes up or Brantley comes up or someone like that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't – if they win a World Series without Altuve, then this is the most magical unicorn team of all time.
I wasn't expecting to hear magical unicorn team of all time this early in the morning, James. I appreciate that. This means with Altuve, you know, he was going to be doing the AAA assignment, but then he had the soreness and whatever in the knee that he had the surgery on. So now he's back, as you said, rehabbing. And with Carrera out, you know, they're going to move Bregman over to short, which is fine. He knows how to play that position. With Altuve sideline, Carrera sideline, and Springer sideline, I know Verlander is a leader. Is this going to be a time where Alex Bregman is going to become kind of the face of the franchise and the leader of this team?
I think he's sort of stepped into that role a little bit or is becoming more comfortable with that role over the last maybe year or so. But, you know, I think one thing that it does do is that it gives Bregman a chance to – I think it gives Bregman a better chance to win an MVP. You know, I'd rather have a World Series shirt than a Bregman MVP shirt. But, you know, it's definitely a chance for Bregman to put this team on his back. And you can speak to this more than I can because I don't really pay much attention to LSU baseball. But it seems like, that's sort of a role that he relishes. He wants to be the guy that can carry the team and that you can count on to get the job done, whatever that job is. So it's a good chance for Bregman to sort of assert himself as the guy over the course of the next couple of months while everyone comes back from injury.
We're talking with James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, I know we've talked about it before, but it's just becoming more and more apparent that the best free agent move in the offseason has to be, bar none, the Astros signing Michael Brantley. He had another multi-hit game last night. He has just been kind of a godsend for this team that's dealing with so many injuries. He's hitting for average and power. He has to be the best free agent pickup of any team so far this season.
I think so, and I think Cleveland is seriously lamenting not extending him or re-signing him because, you know, what has become the Astros' game, just another high average bat. You know that they added him but also subtracted him from the Indians, and the Indians are having a really tough time this season in part because they didn't plan for needing depth. And that's where Michael Brantley comes in. And, you know, he's going to be on a team with Bregman and Correa and Altuve and Springer. Brantley isn't going to get top billing, you know, too much of the time, especially being new to the team. But he has been, with all the injuries, I looked at the lineup last night. I was like, that's not bad. I mean, it's not a disaster. It's not shades of 2013 when you're like, when you look at the lineup and be like, I don't know who this is. Like, where did this person come from? So it's really, it's a testament to the organization. I don't know that you can plan for injuries like this. Certainly not all happening within a week of each other, but it shows some forethought and some planning. And that's, it's always seemed to be the Astros front office's strength.
James, with all the injuries that they've suffered, and we don't know, you know, we know Correa is going to be out for almost 2 months. Altuve, they're going to take their time with. Do the Astros get aggressive and try to add a bat before the trade deadline?
Luno didn't rule that out yesterday before the game. But, you know, I think with the Astros farm system, any team that's more than that looks at their playoff odds and takes an honest assessment of themselves, I guarantee you Luno's phone's been ringing off the hook with GMs trying to capitalize on the depth of the farm system. You know, the goal has always been to build a dynasty in Houston and not so much minor league titles. And so, you know, I think you're going to have a lot of opportunistic GMs who try to dangle pieces that could sort of bridge the gap to July, trying to get, hoping that Luno will panic. And if we've learned anything over the last, six years or so, it doesn't seem like that's something that he does. So at this point, you can only trust the front office, but I think that their chances of making some sort of trade to bolster the lineup, it's definitely gone up more than it was maybe 2 weeks ago.
And James, to further that point that you just made, I don't expect them to make a big splash, but I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a very smart move to get a savvy veteran that's not going to cost a lot of money that may kind of fly under the radar and be the type of player that would help contribute to a run.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's sort of that's been their M. I mean, you look at Charlie Morton, you look at Wade Miley, you look at Michael Brantley. I mean, that's, you know, they were never going to go out and get Machado or Harper. But even when, I mean, like 5 years ago, they were like, the Astros signed Wade Miley, you know, or if the previous GM, Ed Wade, had done that, you'd be like, come on, dude. And you just sort of roll your eyes and say, okay, Mickey Mouse Club, here we go. But Luno does it, and he's got enough of a track record of success that you're like, oh, okay, let's just, I mean, the Luno could trade for the Pope and have the Pope batting like sixth, and I'd be like, I don't get it, but let's just see how it shakes out. And that's sort of the trust that I think a lot of Astros fans feel with this front office.
I just, James, I just imagine the Pope trying to put on a batting helmet with his big hat. Thanks for that.
No, he just wears the Pope hat. He doesn't have the helmet.
James, I appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks.
That's James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time podcast, joining us here on RP3 and Company.
You took the words right out of my mouth, man. I was sitting there thinking, like, how's the Pope going to wear a helmet? He wears the giant. I was thinking the exact same thing. So we're on the same page. Well done. We're a state apart and on the same page.
And James just raised the bar because his co-host will be joining us, Patrick McClellan, at the end of the third hour. So James just raised the bar there. So
what's impressive? What's impressive is that he had the Pope batting sixth, too, right in the middle of the lineup. Like, you didn't have him. Pope batting sixth. That's not bad.
Just slot him right in there.
Right on.
Not an issue whatsoever.
Batting average of 777.
Oh, bravo. Bravo, Mr. Schutz. Bravo, sir. Oh, when we come back here on RP3 and Company, live from downtown Houston, we'll give a little bit of an NBA Finals preview. Game one tonight, Warriors-Raptors. We'll discuss right here on 103.7 The Game. Chill. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from downtown Houston, a block away from Minute Maid Ballpark for this special Houston Astros edition of RP3 and Company. Cody Schutz is back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We talked a lot of Houston Astros so far today, obviously. But, hey, we got some time here to talk NBA Finals. Game one is tonight. The Dubs, Golden State Warriors, even without Kevin Durant taking the court tonight and probably for game two as well, maybe the whole series, they're going to try to win three in a row. First team to do that since the Chicago Bulls of the 90s with Michael Jordan. Standing in their way, the Toronto Raptors, led by a former NBA Finals MVP in Kawhi Leonard, who has carried the Raptors to their first ever Finals appearance. Here's some of my initial thoughts on this series. Toronto, if they want to make this a series, get it to six games, they have to win tonight, game one. In Toronto, and they'll have the home crowd. They will be electric. And if they want to try to make this a series and take advantage of Golden State being a little hobbled, we heard reports that Boogie Cousins may play some, but he but he's still not going to be returning into form. Kevin Durant is not playing. If you want to try to make this a series, tonight would be the time to do that. Take game one and put some pressure on the Dubs, so to speak. Point number two. Kawhi Leonard will at least get Toronto one win in this series. This will not be a sweep, but it will more than likely, in my opinion, if Toronto can't make it a series, it'll be a gentleman's sweep. But Kawhi Leonard is so good, and he's such a great two-way player. Maybe the best player in the league right now, maybe, that he can get you at least one win versus Golden State, especially with Kevin Durant not being out there. Now, more than likely, Golden State will match up Klay Thompson guarding Kawhi Leonard. Klay Thompson is a tremendous talent, one of the best defenders in the league, but Kawhi is still going to get his shots, and Kawhi is still going to find a way. He's good enough for one win in this series. The key for Toronto is going to have to be the bench, Van Fleet, all the rest of them, Ibaka, all those guys that were such a big asset versus the Milwaukee Bucks when they were down 2-0, and then they came and won 4 straight to win that series, the Eastern Conference Finals. They'll have to do that again because I actually think Toronto has a better bench than Golden State. But that's how you're going to have to try to beat Golden State. They don't have Kevin Durant. They still have the Splash Brothers. They still have, you know, former league MVP. They still have Draymond Green, who stirs the drink, so to speak. But they have no depth. Their bench is not great this year because of them trying to keep all their starters together. They've lost some of those glue guys. They've lost some of those bench players. So that's what Toronto will need to do. Kawhi will have to play at a high level. He'll get you a win. They need to win game one. And then the bench has to step up. Cody, but my question to you has nothing to do with the X's and O's in the matchups.
Okay.
My question to you back there in the 237 Roof Studios is, will we get a sideline interview tonight with Drake?
Not during the game. Probably pre or post game is when they'll get him. You can bet he'll be on your television tonight at some point. I don't know about during the game, any kind of interview. Maybe halftime. I could see at halftime if Toronto's got a lead or something at half. I can maybe see them trying to work that in there. What's intriguing to me, though, Kevin Durant supposedly not going to play tonight, but the NBA Finals, if it goes 7 games, will last over 2 weeks. Game 7 is scheduled to be played on June 16th. So if somehow this series gets extended to 6 games, 7 games, I mean, is Kevin Durant really going to be hurt for the next 2 weeks?
I have the same question about that. First of all, the NBA Finals shouldn't last 2 weeks. That's ridiculous. That's just way too much time off between games. That's the first thing. Second thing is, if Durant does not play, now he went with the team. He did fly to Toronto. Okay. But if he does not play at all, then that hamstring injury that they kind of downplay is far more severe than we thought and could have huge implications on what he does with his future. So we'll have to see on that. And as for you saying, well, you don't know if they'll interview Drake during the game, I'm willing to put money on that they will, in fact, interview Drake during the game, probably during game action. That does it for the second hour. Coming up, Les East, when we come back here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost for you, you know, when you look up in the head and you see your mom, you see their head, night in and night out, it's really different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company, broadcasting live on 103.7 The Game, but also from downtown Houston. a block away from Minute Maid Park for this special Houston Astros edition of RP3 and Company. Cody Schuetz is manning everything back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. If you want to give us a call, pick up the phone, dial 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you want to talk Astros, Cajuns, Tigers, Saints. It doesn't matter. If you're nice to Cody, he may put you through. Maybe. We're trying to get Les East of CrescentCitySports.com on the phone. But while we wait, we still got plenty more to talk about. Sources have said, and this was reported earlier today, late last night, that Anthony Davis met with Pelicans Executive Vice President David Griffin in Los Angeles. So the meeting finally took place face-to-face, and this is how I feel about this. I think David Griffin has to do this. It's his due diligence as the man in charge of the New Orleans Pelicans franchise, in charge of turning them around, to go meet with the big star player. This is what he has to do. I also feel that he's probably going to try to give him a pitch. But more importantly, he probably tried to gauge if Anthony Davis does want, in fact, come back. You know, they got a new training staff. They got a new GM. They got a new man in charge in Griff, who's won a world championship. But make no mistake about it. If Anthony Davis still wants to leave and he doesn't want to be part of the New Orleans Pelicans rebuild and reset with new leadership, Griff's not going to sit there and beg him to come back. First of all, that ain't Griff. Second of all, he shouldn't do that to begin with. This is probably just doing his due diligence, seeing if there's any way Anthony Davis wants to return and be a member of the New Orleans Pelicans moving forward. If he doesn't, that's great. Griff is going to have this face-to-face meeting, media outlets are reporting. And if Anthony Davis doesn't want to be here, then Griff is going to put together the best possible scenario for the Pelicans. He's not going to try to do Anthony Davis any favors. He didn't go take a meeting with Davis in L.A. to help him out. He went there to clear the air, put all his chips on the table. If Anthony wants to be part of this, great. Because that's what he said. If you've listened to ever since he's taking over as the executive vice president of basketball ops, is that, you know, hey, we're trying to build something here. If he wants to be part of it, great. But Griff is not going to beg Anthony Davis to stay. He's got the number one overall pick. He's going to take Zion Williamson in this summer's draft. He's got Drew Holiday, one of the best two-way players in the league. And this man knows how to build a roster through the draft and with savvy veteran moves, whether that's trades or anything else. So make no mistake about it. He's not going to beg Anthony Davis to stay. And here's the other thing. I've also seen reports that for some reason, odds makers say that the Lakers are now the front runner to get Anthony Davis. The Celtics are falling to the back of the pack. Griffin is not going to care that the trade proposal was insulting and that there it was a lot of hostility between the Lakers and the Pelicans based on Anthony Davis's trade request. He doesn't care about that. And neither is Gail Benson. If the best move for the Pels is to trade AD to the Lakers and get a bunch of prospects and picks, and if that's the best deal on the table, then Griff's going to make it, period. Okay? I still don't think it's going to be the Lakers, though. I wouldn't be surprised if you see the Knicks or maybe the Clippers or some other team. And Griffin's not going to accommodate Anthony Davis. If Griff can get a great deal from, say, the Detroit Pistons, just to throw a team out there, and they present him with the best package, then guess who's going to the Motor City? It's going to be Anthony Davis. Because Griff is going to do what's best for the Pels, not what's best for Anthony Davis. Remember that through this entire situation. He's going to do what's the best for the Pels, not for Anthony Davis. So, yes, reports have them meeting. That's great. Tremendous. But it's probably just going through the motions of more than anything else. That's my thoughts on that. Cody Schuetz, back there in the 237 Roof Studios. Your thoughts on this meeting that took place between Griffin and Anthony Davis, and any thoughts on Zion Williamson possibly coming to town?
I think the meeting is good, obviously. I mean, who knows what was actually said during the meeting, but nothing can be done if the two sides don't get together. C or IE reference, whatever you want to say, the Will Wade situation. Nothing could have ever been, you know, progressed forward, backwards, any direction until Will Wade had a conversation with someone. Same scenario for Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis was going to have zero chance to even decide to stay in New Orleans until someone came and at least attempted to talk to him. It's a very good sign to me that he took the meeting, because Anthony Davis could have easily been like, no, don't worry about it. I'm not, you know, there's nothing for us to talk about. Thank you, but no thank you. The fact that he went in and he took the meeting, it shows that, one, Anthony Davis is a professional, and he is going to, you know, exhaust all of his options regardless of what his perceptions may be of his current situation. So I shout out to Anthony Davis for that. And two, I mean, I got a lot of confidence in Griff. So having him sitting at a table with Anthony Davis, trying to convince him to stay, I don't know if there's anybody else out there I would rather have doing that. Something else you mentioned about Zion Williamson, I saw breaking news like an hour ago maybe or so. Jake Madison tweeted out, Zion has officially picked his, I don't know what you want to call it, his brand team. Ray, what do you call those, like Clutch Sports and all those teams? You know, the guys that give you your agents and they help you build your brand and they help you work on your contract negotiations. Well, Zion Williamson has officially signed with CAA Basketball. It is, according to their website, it is the most respected team in the NBA for clients and their, guys getting into the NBA. Their client list is pretty impressive as well. Zion is joining guys like Devin Booker, Chris Dunn, Danilo Gallinari, Joel Embiid, Paul George, Donovan Mitchell, Tony Parker, Chris Paul, D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns, Dwayne Wade, and that's just kind of the top of the iceberg there. So Zion Williamson is going to be coming to New Orleans, 99% sure, and he's found his negotiating partners there. So just a little tidbit about Zion and how he's going. He hasn't joined Clutch Sports, which is great, because Clutch Sports, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is who Anthony Davis is under. So
that is correct. He's with Clutch Sports. He changed his representation before last season. And I also want to say that I think Coach K is represented by that same team that Zion signed with. So that kind of makes sense there. And look, it is a positive sign, obviously, that they're getting together, having the meeting, as Cody said. But I don't think it's going to lend it anything. If Griff can pull it off, great. What a coup that would be. But that said, you know, I don't think this is going to exactly help lock up Anthony Davis. Look, if Griff can somehow convince AD, and I know a lot of people, a lot of Pels fans, a lot of supporters just want to see Anthony Davis gone. But, I mean, if he can convince AD to re-up and sign another contract and stay with the Pels, and he can have Anthony Davis, Zion Williamson, and Drew Holiday, and then someone else, I think that would be pretty fantastic. So I don't know. We'll have to see if that's a possibility. But I still think this is just Griff being professional and doing his due diligence is what he's doing here. He's doing what the leader of an NBA franchise should do. You know, he's putting all of his other ducks in a row, so to speak, getting the great training staff in place, getting his GM in place, a guy that he trusts that he's worked with before, the trainer he's worked with before as well. That's what he's done. He's put everything else in place, training staff, GM. Gil Benson committed to investing money into the training facility. Look, he's done everything else so he can present a package to Anthony Davis. And if AD wants to be part of it, great. If not, that's great too. We'll dive more into that right after this break as we welcome on Les East from CrescentCitySports.com. He covers the New Orleans Pelicans.
Raymond, I'm calling an audible. I'm calling an audible. I got to shut you down real quick. We had somebody call in.
Audible.
Yeah, we had somebody call in. We have someone on the Ardco Equipment Hotline, and we're going to go to Les East next, exactly like you said. So I wanted to get this guy in because he has something to say about the Anthony Davis situation. Raymond, I got the Antagonator for you.
Oh, welcome, Antagonizer. How are you doing this morning?
I'm wonderful. Hey, I was thinking about it yesterday when I heard about David Griffin meeting with AD, and I said, well, you know, if he did get AD to stay, we got Zion Williams, we already had Drew Holiday, and then, you know, what if Chris Paul made a return to New Orleans? Because Houston's looks like they're going to get rid of him, so, you know, you throw all those guys together, and I think that's a pretty stand-up squad right there. I'll hang up and let y'all talk about it.
That would be...
Ooh, could I break out the... Like, could I re-break out the Chris Paul Hornets jersey? That would be fun.
Oh, nice. That would be tremendous. There'd be some hurdles there. You still have AD under contract, so if you decide to play hardball with him and say, look, we're not going to trade you and make him be forced to play out his one-year deal, you could possibly do that. But if you do get him to stay and get him to re-sign, do you have enough money to bring in Paul? Because that's the thing that the Rockets are dealing with right now, is that they signed him to that contract, but it's a big contract. It's a lot of money. So would the Pels have enough money to re-sign, give Anthony Davis a long-term extension? You already have Drew, who's $100 million-plus, and you're going to have to sign Zion Williamson, your number one overall draft pick, and Chris Paul? I don't know, but Griff has worked some wonders in the past.
Is there any way Chris Paul could come in on just a one-year deal, or would you have to absorb that gigantic contract?
He would have to agree to be released,
right,
and leave and then, money on the table.
And then re-sign. Yeah, he's not going to do that. Not at this point in his career.
Not in this point in his career, but that would be that would be a good idea. And look, the Pels are in need of a veteran point guard to run the point for them. Maybe it's Elfrid Payton, but if you could get someone else coming in there, that could be interesting. I love that. That's a great call. Good job, Cody Schutz, getting that call on the air, my friend.
Oh, thank the Antagonizer. Don't thank me.
We will thank the Antagonizer. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we will welcome on Les East from CrescentCitySports.com, telling us all things Pelicans right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for any other reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service. And to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game, a special Houston Astros edition broadcasting live from downtown Houston, a block away from Minute Maid Ballpark. It's time now for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our good friend. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com. It's the one and only Les East. Les, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Raymond. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. Appreciate you making some time for us. I want to get to the big news over the last couple of days concerning the Pels, is that reports have that Griffin met with Anthony Davis in Los Angeles. Just your thoughts on them finally having that face-to-face meeting. And do you think it's just simply Griff doing his due diligence as the leader of the Pelicans, and is not really any telltale sign of Anthony Davis being committed to coming back to the Pels?
Well, I think it's definitely a case of David Griffin doing his due diligence. I do think he, from the time he took the job, has been focused on not making any assumptions and finding out for himself exactly what Anthony Davis thinks and feels and what the chances are, if any, of convincing him to stay here. Winning the lottery obviously strengthened his hand in making the case he wanted to make to Davis and his agent. We've talked about this before. I think it was always a long shot that Davis would stay, but I think the presence of Griffin made it a little bit less of a long shot. I think winning the lottery made it less of a long shot. It appears this week from reports that the meeting they had in Los Angeles did little, if anything, to change Davis's mind or Davis's agent's mind. And it looks like they're pretty much on the same page. They're in lockstep, the agent and the player. So it doesn't seem as though Anthony Davis's approach to his future in New Orleans has changed at all since January 28th when he asked to be traded. And even though I think David Griffin has been sincere in trying to make a case for why Davis should reconsider, that doesn't seem to have happened. And frankly, I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference to David Griffin one way or another. If he has a really good player who wants to stick around and maybe sign a long-term deal, great. If he doesn't, then he'll go about and make the best trade he can, because he holds enough cards now that he can put together a pretty good team with or without Anthony Davis.
We're talking with Les Issa of CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, odds makers now have the Lakers leading the pack to be able to secure the rights for trading for Anthony Davis, not the Celtics, who are fading by multiple media reports, and the Knicks. Your thoughts on the odds makers believing that the Lakers, despite everything that has occurred, still being the have the best chance of landing Anthony Davis via trade?
Well, we have to remember that odds makers aren't in the business of predicting what's going to happen. They're trying to set a line that will entice bettors to divide their bets up evenly between one option and the other option, so that they can make their money off of the VIG. So what they're saying is they believe that bettors are most likely to bet that he'll go to L.A., not that he'll ultimately wind up in L.A. And because of ESPN's determination to steer Anthony Davis to Los Angeles, it's understandable that the odds makers would think that that would be the team that bettors would be most likely to choose. I don't think the Lakers can put together the best package, even though they had the fourth pick in the draft. I think the Knicks with the third pick, or the Celtics with all the young talent they have and future picks, I think are stronger candidates. I think they could be a wild card out there, maybe the Clippers, maybe somebody else. Memphis holds the second pick, but not a whole lot else. So I don't think the Lakers are the most likely destination, but it doesn't surprise me that Vegas would select them, because I think that's the team that the general public thinks is most likely, because ESPN's been beating it into our heads for the last 4 or 5 months.
I like how you threw shade there, Les. That's bravo. Take a bow, my friend. That's very good. That's top quality stuff there. let's talk about someone, and this is kind of outside the box thinking, though, a little bit. And we had a caller actually call in about this, you know, about possibly, since the Rockets are in a, by all reports, are offering, saying any player is available if you want to trade for them. And you know, apparently they're going to try to do some type of quick rebuild based here in Houston with the Rockets. Your thoughts on that? And do you think the Pels could be a player, maybe not in Chris Paul, but I don't know, maybe in one of the other guys that are on the roster to help bolster this team?
Well, they could. I think David Griffin is smart enough that he's going to entertain any and all offers and try and leverage them against one another to drive the price up. But, you know, I kind of look at, you know, obviously James Harden's the best scorer in the NBA and one of the best players, best one-on-one scorer, one of the best players in the NBA. But, you know, the Rockets are similar to the Lakers in that they have a lot of interesting parts But in the Rockets' case, they're more proven than the Lakers players, but they're also at or past their prime. So if you make a trade with the Lakers, you're getting a bunch of young guys who have yet to prove they're as good as they're supposed to be. If you trade with the Rockets, you're getting a bunch of guys who have proven to be really good but will no longer be that good in a couple of years. So I don't see that they make a whole lot of sense for the Pelicans, who I think are trying to build a good young team. Now, I understand why the Rockets would be doing it. They haven't gotten to the finals with the group they have, as talented as it is. So why not entertain offers for anybody on your roster and see what's out there? Because it doesn't look like they're going to win a championship with the current group. They may be able to keep the core together and do, like you said, a mini rebuild. So it makes sense from their point of view to entertain offers and see what's out there.
Les, appreciate you making time for us on this busy Thursday, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week and the weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Okay, thanks.
That's Les East, CrescentCitySports.com, joining us, giving us the updates on the New Orleans Pelicans situation with Anthony Davis. The saga continues. When we come back here, we'll steer it back to Houston Astros, get a little Rockets talk as well, as we talk to the other co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast. Patrick McClellan will join us right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm broadcasting live from downtown Houston, a block away from Minute Maid Ballpark, for this special Houston Astros edition of RP3 and Company. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos, as always, back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. But right now, it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our final guest of the day. He is the other co-host, the other man of the Lima Time Time podcast. He's the stand-up comedian. He's the friend of the program. It's the one and only Patrick McClellan. Patrick, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing great. How about yourself? How are you liking the city?
Loving the city. Enjoyed the game last night, my friend, and then went out and got a little bite to eat afterwards after the Hall of Famers restaurant, Biggio's. Tried that out. It was pretty excellent. Had some terrific wings. So it was terrific, man. Always enjoy coming to Houston. It's one of my favorite cities.
Great. We're glad to have you.
Well, and obviously you put in a good word with everyone. That's why I'm getting treated so nicely, right, Pat? Is that how that worked?
Yeah, I wrote a whole blog about it.
Patrick, let's talk. I want to get your thoughts on Astros, but let's talk a little NBA. The reports are coming out right now that your Rockets are apparently putting everyone on the table, that if teams are interested in any of their players, including even Chris Paul, that they can do so. They can call, make trade offers. What's going on with the Rockets? I know they're frustrated not getting past the Golden State Warriors, but are they trying to do a reset or a rebuild here?
That's an interesting question. Nobody seems to know what's going on there. I do know for a fact that Tillman Fertitta is beyond angry. He was looking for heads to roll after the loss, viewed the season as a step backwards, which technically it was. But I think this is just your standard information leak. Just kind of put feelers out there for these players. I don't think it's as bad as it looks. I take that back. Now with the D'Antoni coaching situation, maybe it is as bad as it looks. I don't know. So basically, I don't know what they're doing either, is what I'm saying here.
I like that. You're just like, I have no clue what's going on.
I backtracked myself into that answer.
I mean, obviously, Harden's going to be kind of untouchable there because, you know, he is the best scorer in the NBA. But anyone else is on the table. I mean, look, could your Rockets be aggressive and maybe do something with the Pels and get Anthony Davis? I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, if anything's on the table and Anthony Davis wants out of New Orleans, Would Houston love to have the big fella?
Yes, that. I mean, it's nice to put Chris's contract out there, but let's be honest. The only real movable piece is Chris Capela, and I think that one of the few deals that would be worthwhile is to get Anthony Davis in the last year of his contract here for a finals run. So that'd be my only option at this point. I mean, I'm sure they're going to attain all offers, but that's the only real one. That's the only viable one that I could actually see it happening.
We're talking with Patrick McClellan, the co-host of the Lima Time podcast. He's also a stand-up comedian here based out of Houston. Patrick, I understand Rockets fans are frustrated. I understand the ownership in the front office is frustrated. But there is a process going on here, the way this team has been built. And it's been built and constructed to dethrone the Warriors. And I know they've fallen short. Last year they had the great opportunity. Paul gets injured. And then Harden just, you know, has some of his worst performances in Game 6 and Game 7 last year. You know, if they punch their ticket then, that changes the whole narrative of not only this franchise but the NBA. I know that didn't happen. Is it? I just don't understand why the reaction would be to blow this thing up when they've been so close of getting over the hump and beating the Warriors.
I completely agree with you. I think that the Rockets it's taken them to 6 games is an achievement this year, but they're playing in the greatest team of all time, in my opinion. And I grew up with the 90s Bulls. This Warriors team is the best team ever assembled. They're a super team, and to lose to them is not ideal, but it's not a shame thing. It's not, everybody else can't beat them either. So, or nobody else can beat them either, rather. So I agree with you. I think this is an overreaction and reaction, and that's why I think that maybe it's more of a media narrative that that they're freaking out, at least personnel wise. And I think it's just that Maury's doing a little just info leak to put some feelers out there for players. And the Rockets would entertain every single offer. Of course, that's what every team does. So I think it's just kind of a maybe it might be a little bit of smoke and mirrors, a little page from the NFL draft book. You know, I don't know. I don't know if it's as bad as it looks. At least with player personnel, the D'Antoni situation. I'm not sure what's going on with that, the coaching. But I'm with you. They don't need to blow it up. It's not a shame to lose to the greatest team ever.
We're talking with Patrick McClellan. He's co-host of the Lima Time podcast, also stand-up comic based out of Houston. Patrick, let's switch over to baseball. The Astros, Altuve was doing a AAA assignment, then they called him back, and now he's working on the knee that was surgically repaired in the offseason, so he's not coming back anytime soon. You have Carlos Carrera somehow injuring a rib during a massage. Now he's down for 2 months. Springer is still banged up. I'll start with Altuve. Are you concerned at all that he may not be able to come back this season?
I don't know if I'm concerned that he won't be able to come back, but I'm definitely concerned given that it's the knee that he had surgery on, and also the fact that he was hitting, you know, below 250. So he wasn't quite right, had a few hot streaks in there. So I think it's concerning, but it's so early in the season that if it's anything but surgery, then I think that he'll be back. So that's the one luxury the Astros do have this year, is that the division is weak. Even with the A's surging, they're still 7.5 games up right now, and that they've proven that they can plug in anybody, young or old, and the team's going to still be an elite offense, and it's still going to play close to 700 ball against these good teams. So they have the luxury of being able to wait injuries out, and that's where the depth comes into play. So, I mean, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned, but we have enough time to where I can just wait and see on that one.
Carlos Carrera was having a bounce back here. You know, when he came back last year, Patty wasn't right. We talked about it on the air that he didn't seem right. He seemed like he had been rushed back. He had a playing at an all-star level this season. Now he's going to be out for nearly 2 months. First of all, how disappointing is it as a diehard Astros fan to hear that news? And then how just bizarre is it that a guy, an all-star caliber player, gets injured at home due to a massage?
Yeah. I mean, it's annoying, but I mean, after seeing everything that the Yankees were going through, I still feel like we're not as cursed as they have been with the injury bug, but it's starting to feel like that. Yeah, with Carlos coming back playing MVP caliber shortstop, and to see him that he's back, and it kind of alleviated a bunch of questions that we had, even with the injuries. I mean, he's just proven that he was the number one overall draft pick, and he is a superstar, and that we can all rest easy. So the fact that he goes down sucks, but the injury at home thing is extremely bizarre. But I have a good friend who is a deep tissue masseuse, and she said that if anybody with a prior injury or with compressed ribs, you know, with the compression around the ribs, it's possible that during a sports massage or a deep tissue massage, or even getting in the process of cracking a back, that it's very easy to not very easy, but it's possible to fracture a rib. Yeah, especially if there was already a little crack there, that a lot of the times with a hurt rib, you can hurt it, and it could just be, you know, red, swollen, and bruised. You don't know that you fractured it, and if you don't go get x-rays, and that's common. So it is possible to get injured that way, so I just want to put that out there. Now, I think that it's so weird that the fact that he said it seems like it may be the truth.
We're talking with Patrick McClellan of the Lehman Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Patrick, I know Jose Altuve is the heart and soul of this team. I don't think there's any question. Former league MVP, helped lead this team to a World Series championship. But with his injury this year, does it feel like this team is maybe becoming a little bit more Alex Bregman's team than maybe Altuve's? I know that is kind of ludicrous to maybe even state, but I don't know. It just feels like with the fans and with this team, they've really embraced Bregman, the former LSU star. Is this kind of becoming his team in a lot of ways?
I mean, I'll put it this way. Alex Bregman is the face of the team. And he's a demonstrative guy. He's a guy that's going to show emotion. He's going to wear it on his sleeve. Altuve is kind of like the quiet, calculated mob boss that kind of sits back. You know, he's the godfather. It's still Altuve's team. He's still a leader. But the reason the Astros are so good, or one of the reasons, rather, is because it's everybody's team. It's George Springer is the vocal leader. He's the cheerleader. He controls Club Astros after every win, controls the music. That's his – it's his – fun that you see everybody having. That's George Springer. So they kind of all have their own little they're like czars. They all have their own little thing that they're in charge of, and that's why they're so dangerous, is that there isn't just one heart and soul of the team. It's they're all one heart and soul, and that's terrifying if you're an opposing team.
Cody would say that Altuve is the cerebral assassin. Your thoughts, Patrick?
Yeah, I'll just agree. I'll just agree with that.
Patrick, one last question before we let you out, brother. First of all, I had not been to Minute Maid in a while. The last time I came as a fan, you could walk up the day of the game and get tickets and then go down a level with ease. It was great to see a good crowd there. It was also just kind of – the interaction between the Astros and the Cubs fans was very good. Like, they're, you know, they were very welcoming and everything like that. You know, just bravo to you and the rest of the Astros fan base, man, because you guys are extremely welcoming, even if you aren't rocking the Astros gear. A great environment, great ballpark, and I had a tremendous time, brother. And just bravo to you and the rest of the Astros fans for making people that maybe don't ride with the Houston Astros feel welcome.
Yeah, well, that's just good old Southern hospitality. The Cub fans make it hard. it brought back memories of the old NL Central days where, the Cubs have a great fan base, and this is a city of transplants, and it's a giant city. So it, I haven't seen a team. There is no other team that can do that to a stadium, to an opposing stadium. So, and you know, the last few years, I haven't seen another fan base anything close to that in there. So it was a culture shock. But I mean, you got to give the Cub fans credit. They're ready to wear their team colors and come out. And so they were super annoying. Don't get me wrong. I don't like when other teams are chanting "Let's go Cubbies" in your stadium. But that's why baseball's fun. But yeah, that's just good old. That's just being a Texan, being nice, and less provoked. So yeah.
I like that. And less provoked. So that basically means Cody back in the studio, the next time he needs to come, he needs to make sure to be a little bit more respectful, because you know he's a diehard Cubs fan, Patrick. So you know he needs to be more respectful when he comes.
Of course, Cody's a Cubs fan. That makes perfect sense. Yeah, he needs to be very respectful, because it is possible to get shanked. You have to be as boisterous and annoying as Cody can be. That's the only way to get stacked.
Well, if I get shanked, you can guarantee that I will be bleeding Cubby Blue.
Well, that's just creepy, Cody.
Lizard people, Pat. Lizard people.
Okay, fair enough. All right, I'll allow it.
Pat, appreciate you coming on, making time for us, brother.
Always.
And we'll talk to you soon, man. And the next time I'm in town, we'll have to get together.
Good deal. Let's do it.
Patrick McClellan, co-host of the Limited Time podcast. All things Astros. Need to check out that podcast. Him and James do a terrific job with it. When we come back here on this special Houston Astros edition of RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from downtown Houston. Just a block away from Minute Maid Park. Tremendous show today. I do want to thank our guests, both of the hosts from the Lima Time podcast, Patrick McClellan and James Lasko, making time for us. Terrific stuff from them. It is one of the best, if not the best, Astros podcast out there. So if you have some time, make sure to check it out, subscribe to it, do what you need to do there. Also want to thank John Marques. Man took time out from his vacation to come on the show. Appreciate him from the Town Talk, from the TownTalk.com, and also from CrescentCitySports.com, Les East giving us the latest on the Pels. We got a tremendous show tomorrow. I will be back in studio. We'll have Barry Hurstis, our boy Barry, reporting from Saints OTAs. We will have Eric Narcisse from the Daily Advertiser. He wrote a tremendous story on former STM Cougar softball star Bailey Hemphill. He's going to share that with us, plus much, much more. So make sure to tune into that. And Cody, I want to thank you, brother, making this happen without your work back there in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Wouldn't be able to make this show happen from Houston. So appreciate you, and also want to appreciate the Houston Astros for accommodating us and helping me out being able to do this show.
No problem, man. I enjoyed it. It's been dark in the other room all morning, so that's kind of interesting. But Sport of Politics will be coming up here in just a minute, so I'll have to turn the lights on any second now. But I enjoyed it. I had fun and went off without a hitch as far as I'm concerned.
But, of course. So what you're saying is that the show's better when I'm not there. You can do your job better when I'm not around?
I didn't say that. You did. Something, though, Ray, I do want to say before we wrap up the show, we just have a couple minutes here. I found out something yesterday. Super awesome. Incredible news. I'll send you a picture of it. But yours truly will be in attendance for the LSU Stony Brook game tomorrow evening. I have me a ticket. Me and my dad are going to go hang out. We'll be in the grandstands watching a little LSU Tiger regional baseball at the box. I'm so excited for that.
Dude, that is great. Congrats on getting the tickets. I'll be there as well.
Yeah, but you won't be able there to cheer. You're going to have to stay quiet. I'm going to be able to yell and scream and make all kind of ruckus.
Yes, I will have to behave myself in the press box. So congrats on you. You'll have a great time, brother. And by the way, you can check out LSU, all of their games at the Baton Rouge Regional right here on 103.7 The Game, okay? Tomorrow night's game versus Stony Brook is scheduled for first pitch at 5:30. You will listen to pregame and first pitch, the whole game live right here on 103.7 The Game. And we will cover all of LSU games throughout the weekend there at the Baton Rouge Regional. Also, I will be there all weekend covering the Baton Rouge Regional, the LSU games. I'll be writing game stories and doing short video recaps on that, so make sure to check out the 103.7 The Game website for all that content over the weekend as well. Cody, lead us out, brother. You did a tremendous job today. We will talk to y'all tomorrow. I'll be back live in the studio there. This is RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game.